Sam Cedar. Introducing whiny-ass, teeny-baby conservatives to the truth. Wow, wow, conservatives. That's you crying. The left just got a little bit louder on The Majority Report.
It is Tuesday, December 7th, 2010. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the shadow, literally, not metaphorically, of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. And, yesterday, of course, a very big day for the country. The real question is, was this the beginning of the end of Social Security? Maybe. Maybe. We shall see. Tax deal struck last night. By all accounts, it has the votes to pass in the House and the Senate. On the program today, we'll be talking to Mike Konzul, a fellow with the Roosevelt Institute, and he blogs at Rortybomb blog to get his take on this tax deal. We'll talk about it quite a bit. And also on this program, we will be having shortly joining us will be, you're going to have to help me out with the pronunciation of this. Jane and Garofalo. Oh, she was really great in that Cats and Dogs thing. what's her face?
Oprah.
Was it Oprah? Did she start with that in Oprah, or was it Ben Stiller? Is that the one where Ben Stiller was like, had the, I can't remember. Janine will be joining us today, ladies and gentlemen, live from, I think she's in California. I'm not 100% sure, but we'll find out shortly. Yesterday, as you know, well, you don't necessarily know, I filled in for Keith Olbermann on Countdown. He was sick. Got the call fairly late, actually, mostly during the show, I think. And I thought I did okay. I'd give myself a B. Because, you know, like, the audience is not aware of any sort of the production issues in the back. The audience doesn't care that we had to, obviously, Obama came out with this announcement literally, like, I don't know, an hour and 15 minutes before we were going on air, and it's a big production, but it was interesting. I got to get a little more comfortable with the teleprompter, felt comfortable with the questions, had on Jared Bernstein, who is a late addition to the show. He is Joe Biden's economic advisor. He's considered one of the, I don't want to say lefties, but left of center-ies in the Obama administration when it comes to economics. And I had him on, and, you know, he was more or less evasive to the questions I was asking. There was a great show. Now, understand that, you know, when you get called to sub for Countdown, and particularly the first time, I imagine, I don't know how it differs in the future, but, you know, they basically write the show. Now, I added stuff to the script, and, you know, I had the advantage of, I wake up in the morning, and I am reading the news. And so I'm following all these stories, and I've been doing this for a long time, probably more than most of the producers there. And so, you know, they'll say, oh, we're talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I said, well, have you seen Brian Butler's reporting on this at the Talking Points Memo? And they're like, oh, no, they check it out. So, you know, I had input into it, but they had done this story on basically who is financing our debt. And they really uncovered something that's pretty interesting. That there is no line item for countries that are oil producing. So every other country in the world that buys our sovereign debt, treasury bills, China, Russia, the UK, Zambia, I mean, a lot of countries buy treasury bonds because they're, frankly, a very safe investment. But if you're an oil producing country in Africa or in the Middle East, you how much you own of Treasury bonds are not, it's not broken down. You're just pooled into this group called Middle East Oil Producing Company countries. Huh. And it breaks down what countries those are, but it doesn't say how much debt they each owe, or they own, rather. And apparently this was a deal set up by Henry Kissinger in the early 70s.
They will agree to buy our debt if we promise not to tell anyone. This is of paramount importance to them.
And, I mean, that's like a quote of his. So, very interesting story. And, you know, when we had Jared Bernstein on, I asked him that question, and he was just like, what? Because they had sent out emails to contact different Republican and Democratic leaders about this, and they all responded with, like, basically a collective, Nobody seemed to even know anything about it. But then I asked Jared Bernstein, essentially, you know, isn't this going to be a problem for Social Security in the long run? We will get into the details of this tax deal later in the program when we talk to Mike, but what they're doing is part of the deal, and this is one of the gets. You understand, the give here was to extend the Bush tax cuts for the upper income levels for 2 years. That's what the Obama administration gave. Jared Bernstein, when I asked him, does the administration feel that this is in any way stimulative, that giveaway stimulative to the economy? And he said, no, we don't think it is, which I think is actually relevant, because there are actually some people out there carrying water for the administration arguing that it is somewhat stimulative, and the administration's not even arguing that it is. They're really carrying that water a little bit too efficiently, I guess. 110%. But one of the things was a wage tax holiday, they refer to it as, 2% reduction in what you pay into your Social Security taxes, that will be made up from money from the general fund. In other words, the Social Security Trust Fund will not be reduced, but there will be money coming out of the general fund. There's a lot of people, count me one of them, who are extremely skeptical about this, because what it does is it sets up more fodder for the right wing, for the deficit hawks, and frankly, maybe the Obama administration, to say, look, Social Security is draining the general fund now. We've got to cut benefits. But we're going to talk to Mike about this more in just a few moments. This is a fascinating story before we get to Janine. Well, maybe I'll save it, because this is like a Christmas miracle story. It's like a Christmas miracle. Perfect quarter at 4 U.S. banks. Yes, it's a Christmas miracle. Bank of America, J.P. Morgan and Chase, and Goldman Sachs, the first, second, and fifth biggest banks by assets, all said in regulatory filings that they had 0 days of trading losses in the first quarter. Do you understand what that means? They never had a day that they lost. Every day, they were so brilliant. Or it was perhaps a Christmas miracle. They never lost in trading. Ponder that for a moment while we take a break. How does that happen? Is it possible? The Tiny Tim delivered for them U.S. Treasury bonds at a discount window, where they would pay virtually no interest on these bonds and then immediately carry it over into the actual markets and sell them for 3 or 4%, or loan them back to the U.S. government and buy Treasury bonds again, earning 3 or 4%. It's a Christmas miracle! Oh, thank you, Father Time! We gotta take a break. We'll be right back after this. We are back. This is the Majority Report. Majority Report 2.0. And you know, I'll tell you something. Wouldn't it be wonderful? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had the ability... Wait, what is that? That's not a... What am I... A jungle sound on my... Okay, here, wouldn't it be beautiful if we had the ability to sort of go back in time and make this just for a moment like Majority Report number one? Why, Janine, are you there?
Hello, Sam.
You couldn't hear my 360. You know what? This is too bad because if Janine could hear my 360, we could really, really annoy Janine.
Well, which sound effect was it?
It was just the harp. I just had the harp.
Oh, excuse me. That's my 360. That's the sound of tubercular coughing. Yeah. Listen, I'll hit it again. You like that sound? It sounds so real.
Wow, yeah. It's amazing what you're able to do with the technology. I know. So, Janine, first of all, let me thank you for waking up so early. You're on the West Coast now. Is that not correct?
I am on the West Coast, but usually, Sam, I usually wake up around 3:45 a.m., to tell you the truth. So today, I didn't have to do that. The only thing I had to wake up for today was to talk to you.
Wow.
But it wasn't even early.
So this was your day to sleep in.
This was my day to sleep in, technically. But yeah, because I have to be at work sometimes at about 5:15, 5:30, and usually the location's very far away, and now I have a new dog that I accidentally adopted, so I have to get up extra early, walk him before we go to work.
So what is this job you have? Are you like a professional ice fisher now? Is that why you have to get up so early?
Well, like I said, it's I have to be there super early, and sometimes it's about an hour drive.
No, well,
from where I am.
Tell people what you're doing now. That was my sort of coy way of saying what.
Oh, what
doing?
Am I doing? Ice fishing. You're right. That's what I'm doing. I'm sorry. That's why I didn't catch the joke because you hit it right on the head. Ice fishing.
Darn it! That's the problem. I am always too literal.
Yes.
Wait, no. Tell us. Aren't you doing like?
I am on a TV show. It's not on the air yet. Called Criminal Minds. Wait for it. Suspect Behavior. It's a spin-off of a show called Criminal Minds, and
you can't hear that, but I just played my Perry Mason and my Law & Order buttons.
Oh, okay. Well, Criminal Minds, I don't know what the sound of Criminal Minds is, but I guess it will be, the new sound will be the sound of Forrest Whitaker saying something.
So you're doing the show with Forrest Whitaker?
Yes, Forrest Whitaker and I and Bo Garrett and Michael Kelly and Matt Ryan and Richard Schiff, the wonderful Richard Schiff from The West Wing.
Oh, yeah, you love that guy.
I love that guy, yes, and he's wonderful to work with again. And but more important, let's go back to the dog I accidentally adopted.
Yes, please.
Who you haven't met, although I think I sent you a picture once.
No, I don't know if
over the phone.
Wait a sec. I don't know if you sent a picture. Maybe.
A long time ago, but I don't know if it works. I'm not sure I know how to use my camera on my phone. But
well, people
I think
don't
I
know
tried
this, but
to
Janine
send you a
carries
of how cute he is.
Janine carries her phone around in a sock.
It is not a sock anymore. Actually, a friend of mine gave me a crocheted, what looks like a Pop-Tart that my phone goes in. It's a fake Pop-Tart that the phone
Pop-Tart
goes in now. Now, this is all fascinating for your audience, I am certain. enough about me. I want to go back to Keith Olbermann's show last night and what a delight it was to see you and then my man Lawrence O'Donnell back-to-back. What a thrill.
I would say I gave myself a B. I was a little bit stiff, a little bit, not familiar enough with the script, in the teleprompter. But I enjoyed myself, and I felt like I did all right with the questions. So,
I think you did fantastic. I would say, in all honesty, if you would be more yourself, it would be even better. But for a person who just did it that one time, you did better than anyone. You did better than even professionals do their first time doing that.
I don't know how.
So you should give yourself an A+.
I don't know how to take that. Even professionals do.
No, I mean professionals like people who do that. You know what I mean? Who have a show. I'm not saying you're not professional. I did not mean that at all.
This is like being interviewed by Marc Maron.
I didn't mean it like that. I just meant sometimes they'll have people fill in there who do this kind of thing every single day in front of the teleprompter, and they are not good with teleprompter.
No, I know.
You don't, and you were good with the teleprompter.
I know.
That's what I meant.
I know. You mean I'm an amateur.
Not at all. But when are you doing it again?
I don't know. You know, hopefully soon. We'll see. I mean, yesterday was literally 4 or 5 hours notice. Like, I had to shave there. Let's put it that way.
See, that's another thing. I think you should actually be more Sam. You should. What you bring to the show is yourself. You should.
I should shave on. On,
I know. I think you look great when you don't shave.
Well, you know, the idea when you fill in, I think, is that you should, you know, be, you know, mold to the show. And, you know, so, you know, I think there'll be a little bit more of my personality that I think comes through when I get a little more comfortable. You know, I mean, that's...
And more of your facial hair, I hope.
Yes. No, I'm going to leave different patches of my facial hair as I go...
Or just shave on the air as a thing that you show as part of your personality. You say they gave me 5 hours notice, and that's part of the show.
Right.
You make all of it part of the show. But, you know, it was nice to see Sam Cedar and Sam Stein sitting side by side.
Well, we weren't in the same place. But was you suggesting you got a little Jewish at that moment?
Sam Cedar and Sam Stein, and I just could hear the sound of Hanukkah gelt.
Yes.
That's the sound of my 360 now with a tubercular laugh right there.
So you're smoking these days or what, Janine? No?
I am smoking actually way, unbelievably way too much. And I enjoy smoking and I am not one to slow down, but it's ridiculous. I now am almost back up to 2 packs a day and I smoke
cigarettes. Oh my gosh, really?
So. Yes.
You got to cut back.
It's a long.
You're gonna.
Day.
I'm telling you, the people on the blog are gonna freak out when they hear that you're smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day.
Well, tell them they're all natural cigarettes. There's
oh,
no
okay.
chemicals
right,
or additives. They are all natural cigarettes.
That's all right.
I don't
yeah,
drink.
You don't drink. That's true. All right, that's good.
I don't do drugs.
You don't do drugs.
I do. The only vice I have is smoking, and they are all natural cigarettes. So, but anyway, back to. This great dog I accidentally adopted. Well, actually, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about something your audience cares about. What am I doing? We have to talk about something important. I was going to talk more about how much I love my dog.
Well,
which is important
I don't know.
To me,
you know,
but not to the audience.
At the, you know, these days it's looking it's a little bleak for progressives, don't you think?
I would think so, but I think it's been bleak since the Obama administration kicked off. Things were looking bleak, but you know what is the most bleak thing to me, Sam? As I was driving yesterday to work, and I'm listening to, I believe it was NPR.
Uh-huh.
And just on the teaser, one of the announcers asked this question as they go to break. Should gays be allowed to marry? Right there is the problem. The audacity of asking such a ridiculous question. Do you see what I'm saying? You
this
know
is,
what I mean?
Yes, this is liberal
no
NPR.
To ask that question.
Liberal NPR. Instead of actually saying, okay, here's the here is why there is opposition to it, because there are some fundamentalists out there who are offended by the existence of gays. They're still questioning the basic premise, which is. They might as well be saying, you know, should blacks really be allowed to drink from the same fountains as us?
Exactly.
As white people? I mean, it's the same, it's the equivalent question.
Exactly. That not only should the question not even be asked, and actually I think you're being too kind by allowing even the announcer to say there are those that oppose it. First of all, those people are the ones that don't get a say. This, you know, these gay rights are human rights. These are human beings. And the audacity to ask the question, you're quite right, is like saying, should blacks be allowed to drink from the same fountain? You know what I mean? Like, it is the same question. And, of course, nobody in public asks that question. Now, of course, Tea Partiers would certainly be happy to ask that question. As you know, Tea Partiers don't enjoy sharing the same fountain with African Americans or immigrants and, in some cases, females for that matter.
Let me just say, in their defense, I was at the Beck 828 rally, and I don't know if you've seen this video, but I did see two guys. They were definitely friends, and I know that the white guy, there was a white guy and a black guy, and I know that the white guy was not racist because he was holding a sign with an arrow pointing to his friend, saying, "Do I look like I'm racist?" As he was, and You can see that video if you go. Oh, my God.
Hang on. I just hit my 360 button again.
I got to be careful with what stories I tell you. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
Hold on. Let's just take a minute. Take a minute. Take a minute. I've got the.
I've taken a moment. But the thing is, you know, beyond the racist elements inside the Tea Party. That's just a given. We don't, you know, that's just a given. But the going back to the issue of should gays be allowed to vote, that's a question that need not be asked.
Well, you know,
it just
I'll tell you
need
something.
Need not be asked, but especially not on NPR. Of course, they have the right to marry. The question is, do people have the right to protest it?
I mean, look.
That's the better question.
I have no problem with people protesting gay marriage any more than I have with Nazis marching down the street in Skokie. I think that people have the right to express that.
I have a problem with it.
Look,
I disagree with you.
I am a firm believer in the First Amendment, and I think they have the right to protest whatever they want to protest.
Technically, yes, although I don't say, you know, I got no problem with it. I got a big problem with it. But what I do have a problem with in the media.
Right.
These alleged journalists, these alleged objective people asking these infantile questions and making it seem like it's a legitimate two-sided issue. It is not. These are human rights. These are human beings who have every right to get married. There is not another side to that story.
Right. No,
you see what I'm saying?
Well, I agree. I mean, there is a side to the story of people disagreeing, but there's not another side, frankly, to whether or not they have the right to do it. You know, look, I mean, people can disagree with anything. And I think, you know, we have to afford people that right to disagree. But, yeah, I agree with you. The notion that NPR is asking that question as if it's, you know, a tease at this point. And, you know, what about your boy, John McCain? What about your boy?
John McCain and Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Yeah.
And Mitch McConnell? Well, what about, well, as you know, with Mitch McConnell, it's, you know, it's going to take a while to get through that defense authorization thing. It's going to take at least 125 weeks.
Right. It's going to take ages. Well, listen, you know, here's my sense, too. I mean, frankly, listen, as appalling as McCain is in this whole thing, you know, my sense is that when you look at the way the Senate agenda has been set up, and I think this is, frankly, another deal that the Obama administration has cut. Now, I'm speculating here. But the START Treaty, for instance, that is something that the serious people in Washington still believe is necessary. And I believe it's necessary, too. We're talking about Reagan's treaty. His Highness, the man who should be printed on both sides of every coin. No heads and tails. It should be heads and heads.
And commemorative plate, both sides.
Yes. I don't. Frankly, I don't think we should even eat on any plates that aren't engraved with an image.
No. They just will be on the wall and the mantelpiece.
I think we should have Ronald Reagan's name engraved on every piece of silverware that we have. That's the first law I would institute if I was king.
Agreed.
But
I'm not going to argue with you there. Please continue.
There's this big argument, and this is what the tip-off for me is. When Joe Lieberman says something that I agree with, I immediately get suspect of why he's saying this.
That's absolutely my thing, too. With Joe Lieberman, I was like, okay, so what's going on?
Right. So Joe Lieberman tweets, let's get this done. Let's hold the Senate.
Yep.
Okay, you can keep the Senate open for an extra week, but if you need 60 votes to shut down a filibuster, all you need is one vote to maintain a filibuster, okay? And it's very easy, if it's the last thing on the docket, because the defense authorization bill can be done next year, it's very easy for senators to simply say, I had plans to leave already, I'm going home. The START Treaty is something that there's urgency on both sides that would keep people in Washington. If you make the START Treaty the last thing on the agenda and back schedule everything in, people will be there for Don't Ask, Don't Tell, for the defense authorization. But they didn't do that. And so when Joe Lieberman tweets something like that, against the better at cross purposes to his best friend forever, I'm talking about John McCain,
Yes, of course.
Get very, very suspicious that this is just a freebie for Joe Lieberman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I always figure if he says something that makes me not feel viscerally angry, that something is afoot.
Right.
So I feel the same way about Joe Lieberman. But now, the Log Cabin Republican you were talking to last night.
Right.
On your show. How did you feel when he was referring to John McCain's Mavericky status? And how much respect he used to have for John McCain?
Well, I mean, that was the line that everybody had, right? I mean...
I know, but isn't it hard for you to let people say those things? Difficult to sit there and let somebody say that until this one moment, John McCain was their hero?
Well, I mean, look... You listen to me, young lady. Don't make me give you another coughing fit.
Sorry, go ahead.
I've got the technical difficulties music up right now.
Just so you know, it's not just cigarettes. I actually am a little bit sick, too. I mean, a lot of it's the cigarettes, but I think I'm sick, too. Or it's tuberculosis.
Look,
I don't know.
Listen. You used to be a fan of John McCain. It was 10 years ago.
The Log Cabin Republican, first and foremost, seems counterintuitive to me.
Well, look, I could have indicted the guy for his whole reason to being like, seriously, you're a Log Cabin Republican? What, you're just finding out now that they hate you?
The Log Cabin Republican thing is, and also being dismissed.
Right, I mean,
so, you know, ask, don't tell.
If it was a different
type of conservatives he's, you know, dealing with in his own party, it's a very strange thing. And he could probably allegedly say it's about fiscal reasons, it's economics, blah blah blah. But that's a bunch of bull. That's a strange cat when you see a log cabin Republican. It's like seeing a black person in the Republican Party, and for that matter, a black female in the Republican Party, or the tea bags.
Well, in some ways,
there's no place for them there.
In some ways, I think it's actually, in some respects, it's almost worse because the Republicans are explicit. I mean, they're not. The subtext of much of electoral Republican electoral strategy is, we're not on the black people's side. That's
Southern
the subtext.
Strategy, Gene,
but
it's being the most overt.
It's not just the subtext on the Republican side. It is.
Right.
It's the text. I mean, they literally. It's not. We're not. This isn't like something that we have to send coded.
Jesus. Sam.
This isn't something that we have to send.
Your old friend Janine's dying.
Grandma.
I didn't want to have to break it to you, but.
I hope we don't have to kiss Grandma again.
I know. Well, thank God I never had any children, so I don't have to worry about grandchildren.
No,
they don't have to worry about that. Speaking of which, how's little Mila?
She's good. I didn't see her. You know, she was asleep by the time I got home last night, and she and Nikki had to light the candles for Hanukkah.
Right.
Without me. And...
Because your daughter is a Jew.
Right. Well, she's, you know, she's like...
She's partially. She's not really. She's not really Jewish.
Reform Judaism says that you can pass it by the father's semen. So,
right. I don't know why you're putting her through it, but I guess that's the way you want to live your life.
That's right. No, I mean, it was either that or, like, I was going to turn her into, like, an Amish.
A wasp, like Nikki.
Like Amish.
Oh, that's
anything
that
keeps her from dating.
The thing is, though, if you could get a reality series on TLC, I don't know if you know this about that channel, but they have gone whole hog evangelical, Christian, Amish, whatever, fundamentalist, not just Sarah Palin. They've been going that route long before Sarah Palin got there. But if you have any children, if you have more than 18 children, you will get a reality show. And if you have devoted your life to a God that's coming one of these days, and then the end of days will be nigh, and you and your children are ready for the great end times.
Oh, you
you'll get a show.
You know that we're ready. You know,
I know, but you're not
going to
get a
ready.
Show with that Jewish daughter of yours. You think TLC is going to give you and your forward-thinking family a show? You're out of your mind.
Dude, I'm telling you right now. She's like a full... We send her to school for only about an hour and a half a day. The rest of the day, martial arts training.
Well, then you're going to have to go to IFC if you want a show, because they're the only people I can think of who might give you shows. Speaking of which, IFC just purchased the Larry Sanders Show and the Ben Stiller Show.
Oh, fantastic.
which is nice. And also the comedy DVD that you and I did together, I still haven't seen, so I still don't know. And your daughter's in it.
What do you mean you and I did together? It was your live show. I'm in it for, I did 4 minutes of a 3-hour.
We did some comedy bits, Majority Report thing, and you directed stuff, and your daughter's in it, playing my daughter.
That's right. So in other words, buy Janine's DVD right now, folks.
I was going to say to you, would it kill you to promote it?
No!
Would it kill you to promote it? I mean, I don't want to air this in front of your audience, of course. They can't hear us right now. They stopped listening about 8 minutes ago. So I don't have to worry about that. But I was saying, would it kill you to promote a DVD the two of us worked on?
Let's get a goddamn link on the site, Dorsey and Evan. Janine,
and thanks for not doing it sooner.
I can't tell you how bad the crew is on this. It's really, really just...
The DVD that you and I both worked on is called If You Will, and I can't believe I have to be the one to tell you to
If You Will. If You Will.
If You Will You? And I haven't seen it, so I can't sign off on it, but I'm hoping it's good.
Well, it's your performance.
Because I refuse to look at my visage.
Did you not
doing
ever,
anything,
did
so
they
I can't look
ever
at
see,
it.
Did they not ever see the video that we did?
I did not see any of the stuff we did. That's why I asked you about it. And the only thing you texted back to me was it wasn't contextually integrated as well as you would have liked.
Nikki just IM'd me. She
what did she say?
She said, I heard that. Am I a wasp?
I like to think of you as one, Nikki. I like to think of Nikki as a Midwestern wasp with a father who's a doctor. That's how I like to think of her. And I like to think of you as a Mel Brooks character. I like to think of Nikki as Anne Bancroft and you as Mel Brooks.
Well, I do have that feeling a little bit when we go back for Christmas. I go back to visit the... Oh, jeez.
I won't be celebrating Christmas this year. This may be the last time we talk.
It's going to be a great last interview. Oh, folks, I want to tell you, give me 1 second. If you join as a Majority Report member, one of the bonus CDs we will be putting out is a Janine hacking CD, where it's all different hacks from Janine over the course of the past 5 or 6 years. We have wonderful hacks.
Well, I did switch brands over the years, but the latest is English Ovals cigarettes, all natural, filterless. But when we started doing the Majority Report, I believe I was still smoking Marlboros. So those hacks would have been
a slightly different quality.
A different brand.
Yeah, no, we're doing the full the full gamut. Well, listen, Janine. We have to go.
Why?
I'm talking to a man from the Roosevelt Institute to tell us about the deal.
I'm so sorry. I didn't even talk about anything important in front of your audience.
No, what do you mean? You didn't. It was. Listen, this is not. When it's not just all about news on this thing.
It's all about snooze. Well,
no,
again,
it's
congratulations.
Like it's a lifestyle show too.
It is. It is. It's a lot of fun. It's almost as fun as Rachel Ray. EVOO. Anyway, that's extra virgin olive oil to you. But anyway, congratulations again on Keith Olbermann. I can't wait. Please let me know when you're doing it again. That was fantastic to see you on it.
Will you come on? I mean, you can do this from your phone in your trailer. I mean, will you do that?
I'll only be on a cell phone, though.
Well, it's all right.
So it won't sound very good. I mean, I could do it, but also I can't guarantee when I am or am not able to talk to you during the day.
All right.
You know what I mean?
Huh?
Huh?
What do you mean?
Well, when we're shooting, I don't know when.
Okay.
When I could block a time when I could go privately speak to you.
All right. Well, let's talk later, and we'll figure out next time you come on
Let's talk turkey.
Okay, let's talk turkey.
Okie dokie.
All right. Thanks so much, Janine. Good luck with your hacking. I'm going to send you a respirator for Christmas.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. Ladies and gentlemen. That was Janine Garofalo. And coming up next, we'll be talking to Mike Konzul. Oh, God, it's contagious. Mike Konzul, fellow with the Roosevelt Institute, blogger Roddy Rorty Bomb. We'll be right back after this. This one thing I know, the Coltax and Jim Coang. We are back. This is the Majority Report, and on the phone from Washington, are you in Washington, D.C., Mike?
No, I'm normally in New York, but I'm in D.C. for some meetings.
Ah, right. Okay, fantastic. Mike Konzel, he is a fellow with the Roosevelt Institute. He blogs at the Rorty Bomb blog. That's a WordPress site. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
So it's rortybomb.wordpress.com? I don't know. Okay, so, Mike, you've been following the deal that President Obama announced last night. From all indications, anyways, it looks like this is a deal that has been signed off by at least the Democratic leadership and the Republican leadership. So there's a lot of reason to believe that this deal is going to become the law of the land, as it were. Is that your sense?
It's my sense. It's a little unfortunate. It's waited so long, so much of this stuff switches over at the end of the month, and the Senate is so jammed for time that they've kind of let it go to the deadline. And by letting it go to the deadline, they gave the Republicans basically all the leverage that they could possibly have. So, it's not a done deal, but it doesn't seem like it's getting a huge amount of pushback right out the door.
So let's talk about this, because there's a couple of things. I mean, there's a couple of different ways. Let me just characterize the deal in sort of very broad strokes, and you tell me if I'm wrong, and let's break it down and just use basically your post on it that you posted this morning to talk about these issues. But in general, it seems to me that from a progressive liberal perspective, that the trade-off here is between one being that it gives us some extra stimulus, regardless of how anemic, for the economy. It helps directly people who have been unemployed for an extended period of time and keeps them from sleeping in their cars. It provides some stimulating tax cuts from the first round of stimulus. The opposite side to that would be that from a political standpoint, it was really mishandled, and this could do damage to Social Security down the road. And what else?
So, yeah, let's work it backwards. So here are things not to like about it. One is that it extends the tax cuts for the upper 2%. That's going to roughly bring – it's going to create about 100,000 jobs. It's going to bring down the unemployment rate maybe 0.1%. That's a high-end estimate. It's going to cost us $80 billion. It concedes a huge narrative about progressive politics, which is that people who benefit the most from the economy should chip in the most to provide services and public goods for everyone. It basically concedes that entire narrative to the conservative wing. It sets up another fight in 2012 for this. So it's not like they were extended permanently, but they're being extended for 2 years, which means in 2012 we're going to do this again. And we're going to watch the Democratic leadership almost certainly cave again, or at best just blunder it. So that it just it sets up for another bad precedence there.
It's quite possible it happens after the lame ducks. I mean, in the 2012 lame duck session, right? I mean, if they punted it into this lame duck session, they could probably punt it into the next lame duck session, no?
Exactly. And I mean, it's tough to tell what the political climate's going to look like in 2012,
right
now it's certainly not looking like Obama's going to go in as a strong candidate if you think the economy is going to dictate most of it, which it probably will. Unemployment's very likely to be 8%, maybe even 9%. It's a very weak hand. You know, presidents don't normally win re-elections with those kind of numbers. So I don't think Obama's going to be able to make it a central platform to re-envision a progressive taxation system at that point, as much as he hasn't really fought for it as much as we'd like to see in actual legislative mode.
Right. For all we know, he's going to actually campaign on the fact that he lowered rates for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's very likely what's going to happen. And so I think that's a win for the Republicans ideologically. It's a win for conservatives politically. I think, it obviously is going to it's going to really destroy the base. I mean, a lot of I'm already seeing it. There's a lot of liberals who don't really follow this but kind of check in once in a while are going to, like, check the newspaper today, tomorrow, and the next week and say, wait, we're not going to raise taxes on the rich? Wasn't that the whole point of the 2008 election? Isn't this something Obama's been beating on the campaign trail for years? And, wait, we're not doing that? And so I think it's really going to be a decisive issue for the base. And it's just red meat. I mean, it's both the tax cuts that the rich want, which they're immediately, in a Citizens United world, world, going to put right back into campaign contributions. And it's also going to explode the deficit while keeping unemployment very high, which just creates anxiety. I mean, you know, you're going to have people who are still unemployed who are going to see even larger deficits, because evidently deficits don't matter when we're, you know, when they come for rich people, not Social Security. It's just designed to kind of feed into the deficit commission hysteria that we're feeling right now. So it's, I think it's just a huge loss there.
Right.
We also are extending the estate tax at the most favorable rates that have been seen under the Bush years. So that's
now we're extending. Let's be clear on this, because as far as I can tell, and I haven't researched it too much, but the estate tax is now. We had this one-year moratorium, I guess, that lapsed as a gift from the Bush administration to any billionaires who died over the past year, I guess, to their kids.
Right.
And now we're looking at $5 million for an individual. Is that correct?
$5 million, yeah. I have to double-check if it's individual or family. But it's basically the most favorable rate that's ever existed. It certainly
ever
has existed under the Bush. Yeah,
I mean,
Bush
I think
years.
We're going back now, like, decades. We're giving a break to billionaires, because when it was just at $3.5 million per individual, we're still talking about it captures only 1.7% of the country. And if
exactly.
we raise it up to $5 million for an individual, that's going to be even less. I mean, we're talking about the amount of people who are going to be subject to this tax is so infinitesimally small, and the amount of money that they control in this country, this is obscene. I mean, this is really obscene.
Yeah, so that's it's a bad trade-off for what we gave away. So what do we get in return?
Well,
wait a second.
We go to that, too, I want to talk
mm-hmm.
about the Social – well, let's talk about it, what we supposedly get in return, the Social Security payroll holiday, because this
right.
is perhaps the most nefarious part of this. But go ahead.
So we should split it. One is that we're keeping a lot of stuff that already exists in place. So unemployment benefits have been extended to 99 weeks. There's several types of tax credits that were extended as part of the stimulus ARRA bill. Those are being kept in place. So mind you, this is not an expansion as much as it is a not retrenching. So that's a very important distinction for your listeners to understand, is that about half this stuff is basically we're not slamming on the brakes while the recovery is ongoing. We're not going to yank out unemployment. Now, people who do have 99 weeks of unemployment, which is, you know, a fair amount of people, sometimes you read about the 99ers or hear about them, they're not going to get anything out of this. They're not getting an extended unemployment beyond that. So
we basically just say to those people, good luck. You've been out of work now for 4 years, I guess it is. 99 weeks, I guess, you know, 2 years. And good luck. Sorry. Now that you've depleted your savings and you're so far away from being able to have health care, enjoy yourselves and, hopefully you'll make it to Social Security if we haven't managed to cut Social Security by then.
Exactly. We say hang in there till 2014 till you get some health care benefits, and then also get excited about all the rich people who are going to be excited to hire you because they've just gotten a giant tax cut.
Right.
Yeah, that's basically that's what they're getting. So we're keeping a lot of stuff in place. And I don't want to be too mean towards it because, like, it's really important, but, like, it's also important to keep it in perspective.
Right.
Now,
well, I mean, the thing is, if you're on unemployment now and your unemployment basically stopped last month, you are in desperately need of this money.
Yeah.
And it's going to keep some people, I think, from, you know, basically being homeless.
Yeah. I mean, and from an economic point of view, I mean, I don't want to at all downplay the human tragedy and the justice angle here, but, like, you immediately turn around and spend that money, and you spend it on things that are essential and important to you and that ultimately create jobs and have this huge demand multiplier on it. And the numbers are very clear that, you know, the
Jared Bernstein last night, I interviewed him on Countdown, and he claims that the unemployment extension will add 600,000 jobs over the next year.
Well, it's going to save. Did he say 600,000? It's going to save 600,000 jobs. So that's an important thing. I've seen the study he's referring to, and it doesn't expand jobs; it just saves jobs, because by not retrenching, you're basically not pulling back on that.
Right.
So that's a very qualified statement. I mean, that's important because we don't want to, both for the economy and for the individuals we're talking about, we don't necessarily want to pull back on that. But it's not going to be a very expansionary mechanism. The expansionary mechanisms come through two different things. One is a business credit expansion. I don't find this to be a very credible thing at expanding the economy, though. The Obama team brought it up in September. Basically, it's a complicated mechanism, but they allow businesses to build things and then manipulate the taxes so that it's a little bit cheaper to invest in their own factories. There's a lot of research that says that this isn't particularly stimulative. Actually, a guy named Austin Goolsbee, who's with the Obama administration, his early dissertation, a lot of his early work, was about how this stuff doesn't really do much, just shifts around what economists call rents. And then he went to Atrios' blog to say that it wasn't that the case anymore in the recession. You know, ultimately that's going to be kind of like, it's one of those things that will probably be helpful, but we probably won't be able to see much of it in the aggregate data. I mean, it's going to help a little bit. And the other thing is the Social Security payroll tax cut. It's going to be cut 2 points from 6.2 to 4.2.
Now, is this just on the employee side, or is it on both the employer and employee side?
As far as the details I've read, it's just on the employee side.
Okay, keep going. Sorry.
No problem. It'll get money straight, because if it went to the employers, they'd almost certainly sit on it, as most businesses are just sitting on cash right now. But it goes to the employees, so they'll in theory turn around and start spending that on aggregate demand goods.
Now let's talk about this for a second. There's two issues here. One is that when that 2% is saved by the employee, that's bound to be made up on some in some degree by the employer, right? I mean, if I know that Evan and Dorsey, my staff here, let's just assume, hypothetically speaking, that they get paid, okay, just for the sake of this argument, and they were to get a 2% discount on their on their Social Security tax, I immediately know, like, hey, wait a second. These guys are 2% happier. I could probably, I was going to give them a raise, but now I could just give them a little bit less of a raise. I mean, doesn't it have that effect, essentially, that the employer quickly absorbs this instead of giving any pay raises?
It's possible. That's certainly something to worry about, especially if we were to keep this on a longer term basis. Now, whether or not we're going to pull this back at the end of the year is part of the debate that's ongoing. Right now, it's targeted for 1 year.
Okay, this is just 1 year.
It's just 1 year.
Okay.
And you, as an employer, know that'll end at the year, and your employees will all rush off to another radio station podcast if you don't keep up with their wages.
Good luck, guys.
In theory, that's not a big issue. And ultimately, what we sort of want you to do is hire more people rather than expand the wages of the people you've already employed, though there's a kind of debate about how to set up the taxes to do that. The big issue is that, this is very short. It's a very small stimulus. So it's about $120 billion over the year. That's one number that I've heard on this. It's not clear how much of that will go towards spending versus how much will go to pay down debt. Obviously a lot of Americans are very over-debted right now on their mortgages, on everything else. Cram down failed, so there's not really a good judicial way to kind of write down a lot of this debt for consumers. So a lot of this might end up just switching debt owned by Citigroup and J.P. Morgan over to taxpayers' dollars. I don't know if that's a terrible situation, but it's important to understand that tax cuts are normally not very good stimulus. They were kind of the bad part of the Recovery Act, and this is entirely tax cuts.
So, I mean, when you look at this, you're looking at this in terms of, okay, how much does this, at the end of the day, stimulate the economy? Because at the end of the day, the most important thing is not simply, maybe on a political sense in terms of what our expectations were, we wanted to see tax cuts return to some semblance of normalcy and fairness. But aside from that, the what you're weighing against that is the stimulative effect of this, so that the economy is better, so that the pressure is off of everyone, and your verdict is essentially, not so much.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair verdict. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to say that this is like the first best bill. people are going to be paying down debts and buying stuff, normally we'd like the government to take the money and like build infrastructure and build public goods that we all take advantage of for the next generation, instead of, you know, sloshing around some paychecks to people who may or may not be paying off bad debt and et cetera, et cetera. Like,
right. When the government spends money, we know that it's going into the economy. When we give money essentially back to people, we don't know what they're going to do with it. And so there's just, I mean, that seems to be basic physics. But let's talk about, I want to talk about this payroll tax holiday, because there's some people who are very concerned, and I think you made this point too, that this is something that was called for in the Debt Reduction Commission, and that it's a way in which to create a political environment that makes it easier to cut Social Security. And Nancy Altman from the Social Security Works, she quoted FDR in a piece that she wrote, basically entitled "The End of Social Security." And FDR said this, and I never read this quote before. When asked about the impact of payroll taxes on the economy, he said, "I guess you're right on the economics. They are politics all the way through. We put those payroll contributions there so as to give contributors a legal, moral, and political right to collect their pensions and their unemployment benefits. With those taxes in there, no damn politician can ever scrap my Social Security program. Those taxes aren't a matter of economics, they're straight politics." So in other words, when Alan Simpson, who was bequeathed his Senate seat by his father, asks Social Security citizens, essentially, who receive Social Security and who pay into Social Security, calls them teat suckers and says, "You got to sacrifice and not be so greedy," we can respond with, "Go to hell. Our ancestors paid into this account with the idea that they would be paying for us, and their ancestors paid in with the idea that they would be paying for them. And this is the social compact." When you start to reduce taxes going into Social Security, it changes that dynamic. And the question is, in a year when this tax holiday expires, will there be the political will to allow it to expire?
Exactly. And separately, that's crucial. And the other thing that runs parallel to it is the senior administration officials are running around telling reporters that the deficit's not being run through Social Security. It's actually being run through the general fund, which is reimbursing Social Security. However, that is a very technical, weird thing to describe to people, and the administration is not particularly good at it, and it's not clear that they want to be that good at it. So what you're going to have is that a year from now, the deficit's going to be much larger. It's going to be much larger in large part because we wanted to give tax cuts to the richest 2% and extend a very generous estate bequeathment inherited aristocracy in our country. Now, what we're going to have the narrative in the media, in the mainstream media, you're going to hear over and over again is that this was deficit as a result of cutting Social Security, or, you know, cutting Social Security revenue. And that, you know, there's going to be all this hysteria about the fact that something happened with the Social Security payroll, and we obviously have to do something on Social Security at the other end. Now, a lot of people are saying, you know, that's the kind of paranoid, hysterical view right now. I don't think it is. I try to be very rational about these things, but like
You sound more rational than I do. But if you're worried about this, I'm worried about it.
Right. It's one of those things that, like, we already see how unhinged and how completely divorced from reality that the Social Security debate is right now, that we may have a technical problem in 2037. So, you know, we have to ignore all this other stuff that's happening right now.
Right.
I feel that it's going to double down on that.
Right. And frankly,
really
the Obama administration has been sending up signal flares. You know, when they appointed this deficit commission, they chaired it with two foes, essentially, of Social Security. You know, forget about how Erskine Bowles refers to himself as a Democrat or not. The bottom line is, this is a guy who was all for privatizing Social Security under the Clinton administration. And so, I mean, and Simpson is, you know, would be the poster child of someone who wanted to attack Social Security. I mean, so there's a lot of evidence to back up at least, past performance is no guarantee of future performance, but it would certainly appear that the Obama administration has bought into the notion that Social Security is expendable because the table's been set.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Deficit Commission is like a great statesman compromise between the center right and the hard right in the country.
Right.
So, like, the idea that it represents, like, everyday people you'd meet on the street is insane. And what's disturbing is you see people like Dick Durbin, who's, you know, solid yes. liberal. He's a very good proxy for where the president is, saying, you know, maybe we should raise the age on Social Security
right.
retirement. Perhaps the most regressive transfer of wealth we can do in this country right now. You know, it's really worrisome. It makes me think that we really need to guard the walls on anything that touches what the public perspective is on Social Security.
Mike Konzel from the Roosevelt Institute. He blogs at rortybaum.wordpress.com. We'll put the link up on majority.fm. And follow him on Twitter. I was following you all night. I don't know, did you even sleep last night? Because you seem to be tweeting
a little bit. I've been traveling.
The night, and then 2 hours in the morning, he was up with a post, and it was crazy. And I would add that the Deficit Commission, not just between the center right and the hard right, because frankly, even Tea Party members don't want Social Security cut. It really is, in some way, just a sort of a conversation amongst the extreme wealthy elite in this country, in some respects, with a. I don't even know if I would call it, I don't know. I mean, the ideological spectrum is getting a little bit weird these days, and it's clearly just sort of the establishment saying, let them eat cake. If they can
The wealthy pay a little bit too much, and the poor get a little too much. And, I don't think that's right at all. I don't think that's accurate at all. So it's important to fight it as best we can.
Mike Konzel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, folks... We're going to we got a couple more minutes. No, let's keep the music down. I gotta finish the story about the. I talked about the perfect quarter. That should make everyone so happy. It's Christmas season, everyone. Christmas miracles abound everywhere. When you trade at one of these firms, if you are one of these firms, you'll never lose money. It will rain down upon you. A couple of quick stories before we go. I'll save these for tomorrow. We've got 30 seconds here. Wrap it up. So, folks, go buy Janine's DVD. If you, it was a show that she did in Seattle. I was there. It was a great show. She was extremely funny. Sort of like old school Janine comedy. With references that, of course, that I only got like half of them because they, we did some short videos. It's a good DVD. But folks, I would also tell you, Just Coffee at justcoffee.coop, that coffee makes a great Christmas present. And if you put Majority into the coupon code, you get 10% discount. Buy a lot of coffee. We're going to have a Majority Report brand soon. And also, if you can, please, I know this is a tough time of year for people with expenses, but if you can become a Majority Report member, you guarantee to keep us here. I got to check and see. I assume I get after minimum for the fill-in last night, but I'm not sure. So that helps. Please, if you can become a member, that would be great. And I'm going to put a word in for Stitchers. Stitcher app on the iPhone. I listen to the show every day on Stitcher. I download it on iTunes to pump our numbers, frankly, but I listen to it on Stitcher because it's very convenient. And if you download it before you get into the subway, you can listen down the subway. It's awesome. And it takes like 20 seconds to download it. I don't get how it works, frankly. All right, folks, stick around. You can IM me at... Majority FM or Cedar MBS, any old IM you have. We'll take your IMs coming up after this. Folks, see you tomorrow. Nikki responded to Janine's waspy thing by writing back, I was born Catholic. I don't know if she ever went to a Catholic church, though. Yes, she is a shiksa, though, says Matthew. Well, it's interesting that Nikki's listening to the show. That's a positive. Let's see this. Okay, I'm going to take your... We're going to have Dave Dayan back on. He's so good. I mean, I just find myself reading, everything he writes, and it's really good. And Mike was very good, too. You got to follow Rorty Bomb. I mean, it's... frankly... The best thing about this job is being able to email people who I think are significantly smarter than me to explain. It's like for me personally, it's like a free learning annex course, making up for all the time that in college I was just goofing off. I got thrown out of my logic class. You ever been like reprimanded in college for talking? A guy named Jeff Rosenthal, who has gone off, who left college to go to Second City, and he's now a writer in Hollywood. But we used to sit in the back of logic class, and it's embarrassing being reprimanded in college. It's one thing in like high school, like Mr. Cedar, would you please join the class? You do it in college. It's really embarrassing. Bob Flav. Nice work on Olbermann, dude. Did we win, or is this just a bone? Oh, well, take care. Oh, that was at 8:44 last night, I guess. I don't know. AOL Systems Management. Please. Whoever this AOL Systems message guy is, please stop harassing me. Constant. Spam. Wow, Sam, you did a great job last night. Excited to hear Janine's back for today, too. Okay, this must have been earlier. Todd Slater, Sam, the Jared Bernstein interview was fantastic. Like you said, he was evasive, but you held his feet to the fire, especially about his deal giving fire. Social Security opponents loved it. And that was before I, because they released the deal. Like, literally, 45 minutes before the show was to start. And I'm still like, I hadn't even read the I hadn't in any way gotten sort of situated, and it was so I didn't see that part about the tax holiday. I didn't have time to break it down, but the idea in general of just increasing the deficit, and in this case it's even more nefarious now because you're drawing a line. Although it doesn't increase the operating deficit of Social Security, you're drawing a line from the deficit to Social Security, making it easier to couple, and that's worrisome. On the other hand, people need their unemployment benefits, but I just can't help but think that there was a better way for the Obama administration. But, I think like on some level it's starting to get to the point where that is an unhelpful perspective to take. That the more helpful perspective can take would be, how can we pressure the Obama administration more, even if it's not, I don't know. I mean, I am wrestling these days with the idea of the trade-off in, is there a value in primarying him? Is there value in pretending that Bloomberg is going to primary him? I mean, who knows? But it's bad. It's bad. But, who knows? It could get better.
High on the hill was a lonely goat herd. Lay, hood, lay, hood,
right?
Lay.
This is the...
Loud was the voice of the lonely goat herd.
May have to fill up an entire...
Lay,
hood, lay, hood, 360 with just songs from some of the music. Maybe tomorrow. Hey, the good news is the Pats just wiped the, and I got home.
But it was
and
the Jets.
What do you mean it was the Jets? They're 9-2, or they were 9-2. And, you know, I can't tell you, like, I was so psyched to watch that game. And then, of course, I got the call about Olbermann. I totally forgot about the game. And I got home, and, you know, I was just like, ugh, so exhausted. It was such a long day yesterday because, you know, on some days I know when I have nothing booked afterwards that I'm going to have time to go home and take a nap and, you know, and deal and no. Let's go, Neff Kitty. J.P. Morgan et al. Remember the articles I sent you, J.P. Morgan and Madoff? I think they may have hired his programmer, Wiz. Well, no, I think it was basically the Fed was signaling to these major firms, hey, we're going to be doing another sale on bonds, or we're going to be buying up bonds. So if I know that the Fed is going to go and buy bonds next week, let's say, that's going to put an upward pressure on the price of bonds, on their return. And so I buy them, and then the Fed comes in and buys a whole mess of them. Price goes up, and then I sell them. I mean, that's basically what it is. Noah doesn't look into the programmer who wrote and ran the system that produced all those statements for Madoff showing fake profits for all those years. That's what needs to be investigated. Well, I agree, but I actually think these profits are real. Can Nikki do the prayers? Yes, she can do the Hanukkah prayers. Sugar high 7.7. Tar is 100% natural, all natural. I'm happy now. Good to hear you're opening the idea of primarying Obama. Frankly, if Bloomberg runs, I would be inclined to vote for him, as he's the same of Obama, except for that guy has a set. Remember Al Franken for president? Hope it comes true someday. 2016 prayer. You know, I mean, this is the argument about Bloomberg that I've seen and that I'm not sure I don't subscribe to. Which is why I think he can actually be very dangerous for Obama. Because he's going to attract sane Republicans. You know, both of them. And if there is very little daylight between Bloomberg and Obama in terms of their policies, why not have it attributed to a guy who is not nominally a Democrat, as opposed to a guy who is nominally considered a Democrat? I don't know. We got to get Franken reelected first before he talks to think about president. Svengali says, really enjoy getting to listen on podcast. Different host in last night for MSNBC. It was a little weird to get Ed during Rachel time, but it was a change-up. Also, I was happy to hear that Fenton from Home Movies is getting work still. That kid was always a real douche. However, between him and Sam Stein, I expected Hiram Berkowitz, Goldman Feinberg, come on and begin spinning dreidels. Never mind, never ever write emails about economics to people when you are punch drunk and also gin and tonic drunk. I don't know what he's referring to. He may have sent me an email last night. You know what's funny about that is he's referring to Fenton, who was my character on Home Movies. But if you go to IMDb, I think the last character I'm down for is actually the douche on Assy McGee. Very proud. Oh, folks, did I mention? I meant to mention. Svengali Says has a new blog. It's diaryofamadeconomist.wordpress.com. Svengali, here's my suggestion to you. Run to your local register online and try and get that website, diaryofamadeconomist.com or madeconomist.com, or so that you can have it redirect to your WordPress. Also, I don't care if Janine is a shiksa. I'll make a proper Jewish woman out of her, if you know what I mean. I do. It means that you will be doing a lot of house cleaning and whatever she says, as far as I can tell. Yo, Sammy, Janine, one of my favorite things you guys have shed light on, especially on the Merger Report in the book FUBAR, is the idea of conservatism as a mental disorder, how it defers to authoritarianism above reason. I'd love to hear you guys bring this up a little bit again, how it applies to today's political battles. Sorry, Superfunk, a little bit late. We had Jonathan Weiler on in the pre-show. You know we should have him back.
Yeah, definitely.
It was a great interview, but you can go back and listen to that. He gets into it quite a bit. Obama has stepped into Republican waters, has bought into killing Social Security, says Hira Popfill, supports Sanders' intent to filibuster. Has Sanders announced that he's going to filibuster this?
Yeah, last night on the Ed show, he said he would do everything in his power to stop it, and then Schultz followed up, so does that mean a filibuster? And he said he's not going to rule that out.
High on the hill was a lonely goat herd, lay, odle, odle, hee-hoo. Loud was the voice of the lonely goat herd, lay, odle, odle, oo. Ho, ho, lady, odle, ho, 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 lady, odle.
The lapsed estate tax allowed the Steinbrenner sons to inherit the Yankees tax-free. Otherwise, they would have had to sell the team to pay the inheritance tax, like the Wrigleys had to with the Cubs. That's a nice $500 million tax break for one family. Gee, I wonder if any of that money will find its way back into the Republican Party coffers. Were you at any time close enough to Chris Matthews to feel the gravitational pull of his head? Indeed. Indeed, I was. Optimal Tomatoes, good job on Countdown. How much experience do you have with the prompter? You were somewhat stiff, but better than most. B+. My experience with the prompter includes last night and a pre-taped show where I did a little bit a year ago. So, little. But I thought I did okay for the first time. But, you know, it's again, it's like one of those things like, you can't put a scroll on the bottom of the screen. Hey, forgive the fact this guy looks like he's reading from a teleprompter because it's his first time. Newsflash, newsflash. But, you know, hopefully they'll have me back and I will have more practice. And I will practice practice here. For a first time, it was really good. Thank you. G. Beard. Hey, Sam, what are the sponsor member numbers looking like? Things on the up? Things are pretty good on the member side. They need to get a little bit better, to be honest with you. I've just been running around too much to get into a, sort of a panic mode. Slight panic mode on the member side. Panic is the wrong word.
Significant concern.
But, well, you know, what we'll do is we'll start to, we're going to have a group meeting afterwards, and we will figure it out. The podcast numbers, just growing exponentially. You know, usually what I do is I check the podcast download numbers so obsessively that I'm never surprised by anything. But I didn't check yesterday, because right after the show, you know, running around, we checked today, and it was just like, let me do the math on that. We had by far Friday's, was it Friday's podcast? Yes, because people are usually like a day, day and a half, 2 days behind. Friday's podcast was a 10%, approximately 10%,
about that,
bump from the highest download day we had ever had before. I think the other highest download day was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we had a lot of people then, but in a normal week.
And to have it happen 2 days later, forget about it.
Yeah.
So the audience is growing exponentially, and I demand that you keep up with your membership percentages. Don't make me have to account to Don't Be a Putz, who's insisting that I should be able to convert 22% of you. Sandy McGee, you were great last night. Thank you for having Janine on. Pats versus Bears Sunday. I'm going to have to take my Bears. Sam, it did not look like you were reading from a teleprompter at all. Well, look, there were moments where I was like, you know what? I didn't read that like I knew what that word meant. And I'm not talking about, like, I didn't know what the word, you know, there was no words that I didn't know it meant. But, like, you know, like, even what sticks out for me, because it's such a perfect example, of during the Palin segment, where I said, like, you know, she gets $250,000 for doing this. And it should have been this leading into the video. But, you know, as you're reading, I just wasn't familiar enough with the reading and just not clear. I didn't know what was happening, to be honest with you, for part of it. So I didn't know when the roll-ins were happening and this and that. So it'll get better. But I thought, actually, and I was a little skeptical about that Sarah Palin thing, but, you know, I was talking to Richard Wolf. I actually think there's something to this whole notion that it is a pretty amazing thing that there was a member of the Tea Party who is actively trying to sideline Sarah Palin. Now, she obviously knew this, why she came out with an immediate, not going to do that. Thanks, but no thanks. It's interesting. There, you know, it's an interesting concept that there are fissures not just between the Tea Party and the Republican Party, but also within the Tea Party. I was at that Kevin Semichel. I was at the Janine show. What was that distracting piece of tape on her shirt? I don't know what you're talking about. Press conference at 2:20 today. Obama press conference 2:20. Anybody have an idea what that's about?
They're adjusting to our broadcast time.
Yes, possibly. Okajikajik, how did it feel doing the show last night? Great. Confused about the estate tax and small farms. Do you know offhand the skinny on the issue? Yes, I do. It's virtually impossible to find an example of a small farm valued under $5 million. You know, I guess it depends on what your definition of small is. Of a small farm that has been lost because of the estate tax. I mean, somebody went out and actually tried to find one as a study, and no one's been able to come up with any example of one, to my knowledge. That it's never happened. It's just a fact. You know, I don't know what to tell you. That's just the fact. If you're getting $10 million from your parents or $5 million from your parents of assets, and you've got to pay 35% tax on that, you know, reverse mortgage it. You can do that. You can take a loan against it. You can rent it out for a couple of years. $5 million house or apartment. Yes, Adrian Gonzalez. Huge win. Sucks. Mr. Intro of Janine. Didn't know who it was. What? I thought it was a male actor friend of yours. Any danger her smoking habit has made it impossible to do Catherine Harris? Or possible for her only to do Catherine Harris? What a cool surprise turning on Oberman and seeing you on anchor last night. Only for a millisecond did Albert Brooks and broadcast news flash in my head. Because you never seen behind you the proverbial TV desk. And I've never seen you behind the proverbial TV desk. And then my husband and I were completely absorbed in the program. Great job. Thanks. Thank you, Farmer Gillian. Do you light the menorah? It's actually M-E, and yes, I do, every night. Dude, where did you get that suit and tie? There's no way that came from your closet. You look sharp. Okay, the jacket was mine. The tie, I think where did I get that tie? It could have been from a different TV show I did. And I did this show for NBC last year, pilot, and they bought me a tie and a suit, and then I kept it. I was like, oh, awesome. But yes, I get a lot of ribbing about my clothes. David Rodriguez draft Bernie. Oh, David, I'm going to send you that new picture. Gosh, I got to remember to do that. You know, here's the problem with Bernie Sanders. I don't think a New York Brooklyn Jew from Vermont is going to win an election in this country. Sad to say. Let's just get him to do the filibuster. Let's see. 11:45. Number at Facebook AOL. Who could pose as a serious primary threat to Obama? True progressive? Democrats won't support it. True to, well, actually, you know, frankly, I think the real danger, the real point about a primarying of Obama is that it's close to the point where it could come from someone who is not any ideologically different from him. You know, I don't think an Evan Bayh, you know, the best thing that could happen to Obama is if an Evan Bayh wanted to run as a Democrat, frankly. You know, I mean, the best thing that happened to Kirsten Gillibrand, and, you know, she's become increasingly more progressive. You know, she was representing a pretty conservative district, back, it's my district, upstate, New York 20th, where a Republican has now taken over her seat again. She became more progressive as a senator and, you know, responding to the state, and I think responding to who she actually is in some level. But the best thing that ever happened to her was Harold Ford. Do you remember this? Harold Ford jumped in the waters. Do you remember this, Dorsey? Harold Ford was squawking about running for Senate in New York.
Yeah, and the big money people were buying.
Yeah, and as soon as Harold Ford did that, it was like it was the best thing that ever happened to Kirsten Gillibrand. People are like, oh, geez, Harold Ford, F that. And I'm not convinced, look, I'm not convinced somebody didn't say, like, hey, do her a favor. Seriously. Because that campaign was so bad. What did he say? Like, he had a couple of comments. I'm like, listen, I've helicoptered all over the state. I know exactly what it is to be a New Yorker. And I mean, this is like literally something that sort of just... Somebody's paying you to do this, right? Somebody's paying you to be this bad of a candidate. So, you know, I mean, frankly, do I think that Hillary Clinton would be any different? Not on the politics, not on the policy. Maybe on the politics. But here's the bottom line. If anybody's going to run a credible challenge, because, you know, there's no point in supporting a non-credible challenge to Obama. Because at the end of the day, I do think that he is better than Sarah Palin or John Thune or really, frankly, any Republican. Marginally better, though. Marginally better. I actually think that Bloomberg, you know, because his policies, as far as I can tell, would be more or less the same, and it's not a Democrat, might be better for a progressive. Because why do you want to taint the brand? I mean, you know, let's see what happens with Social Security. But I think he could be, I don't know who that primary challenger would be, frankly. I mean, I just don't know. And they'd have to start raising money almost immediately. I mean, if you're going to get $10, $12 million for Iowa... Which is less, but is it? No, it's not even a year away, right?
I think it's 14 months.
You need to raise, you know, $500,000 a year, a month. Which, it's actually the pace of which our membership is.
Come with me, and you'll be.
Crystal Count, I think we've yet to find out how Obama may get or not, and then how much energy might whip up for a serious Dean challenger or something. Dean said Obama made a huge mistake. Yesterday, Dick Lugar essentially called for working with Obama, and I'm sure Obama loved the support. To me, the picture of them together, essentially the picture of two like-minded. We essentially elected Dick Lugar in 08. Well, maybe, but I think he's talking about the START treaty. Marginally better. The argument against that is that Obama's co-opted, institutionalized, and put a Democratic label on tax cuts, torture, Afghanistan. How much lower can he go? Well, I agree with that, Crystal Count. I agree with what you're saying. I mean, that's a legitimate argument, and it really is just simply a matter of degree. I mean, that's why I actually hear myself saying the words of, like, I could conceive of a world in where I would prefer Bloomberg. Which are words that just shock me would be coming out of my mouth. Because of what you're saying there. You know, if we're going to get these policies, and we have no choice, this is the best we can do policy-wise, well, then I would prefer it not have the imprimatur of Democrat. Or liberal. J. David Lara, hi, Sam. Glad to see you guest hosting last night. Great job. I browse the news networks to hear more and more Obama apologists blast the loud left for picking a fight. Now this deal paves the way for START and Don't Ask, Don't Tell. START was a treaty signed by Reagan, for God's sakes. Paves the way? Are you giving me... I don't know why I'm getting mad at you. You're just telling me. I find this ridiculous. See, look at me. Look at me. Yelling at J. David Lara, and we agree with each other. This ridiculous Don't Ask, Don't Tell will not be repealed. START is going to pass, so basically the further erodes the liberal base, and I'm more than open to having Obama primary. Jimmy Reefer Cake. Sam. Forgive me, dude. I gotta read it. You get Jimmy Reefer Cake. You're asking for it. Sam, you were, buttery smooth on Countdown. So now that Santa is giving everyone what they want, let's talk about how to pay for it. Draw down the military spending or cut Social Security? I think Obama wins that battle hands down, so let's start the debate. This is a place I must stand firm on. If he caves in this final battle, I'm boarding the fuck you Obama train. It's a one-way ticket to disenfranchise Sid DeVille. You know what? I mean, I don't mean to mock you, Jimmy Reefer Cake. But, I mean, honestly, you got to just – could be time to just move to Jimmy FR, RF. And I have no problem with marijuana. I have no problem with booze. But, you know, if I get an IM from Jimmy Boozy, Jimmy Tap of the Kegger, I'm going to – But your point is, I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry. He writes, come on, man. Okay, I'm sorry. But no, your point is right. Listen, your point is right. If the Democrats preside over the cutting of Social Security in any way, shape, or form, I honestly don't know what to do. Maybe we turn this into a music show where we talk about the four bands that I'm aware of. No, I mean, obviously, look, you know, the struggle will go on. But I mean, I think it's really, the question becomes, you know, what do we do? What is the value of a Democratic Party that sells us out on Social Security? And by us, I'm talking about the entire country. You cannot find anything more popular than Social Security. I asked every one of those freaking nut jobs at the Beck rally. Government's too large. The bills, there should be a law that makes bills not 100 pages long. You know, we got to have this whole God and government separated. That's wrong. We're not living the actual Constitution. I've never read the Constitution, but I'm taking a course on it. This country is turned into a, Sharia law. Obama's a Muslim. Doesn't matter who I talk to. Should we cut Social Security? Well, no, because that's already there. Or no, I wouldn't cut Social Security, but there's other things, you know. None of these people. And so, you know, if the Democrats preside over this, what is a naked theft from the American people to rich people with no benefit. You know, like, yes, the banks robbed us blind. We did not get anything in return. Nothing. We simply, but I do believe that we stopped a major crisis where people, you know, where our entire financial system would have frozen up. That there was a lot of different ways to have dealt with this. This was just one of them. But at least in that scenario, catastrophe was averted. And I do think that there was something catastrophic that was happening. I think there are other ways that we could have approached it. But Social Security is not to rob from Social Security to give to the rich in tax cuts is not a catastrophe averted. The catastrophe is still there. In fact, it increases the catastrophe because you have, what are you going to do? You lose your job at 55. You don't find another job. You don't get Social Security until, you know, 2 or 3 years later. What are you going to do? You're 65 years old and then your job is to haul trash or to wait on tables or to do most of the jobs that require some type of physical labor. Your just body gives out. What are you going to do? I imagine it's going to end up being something that is going to require government intervention. Or we're just going to have a lot of homeless people and infirm people. A guy from Silent Hill, hey, great job on Countdown. Were you nervous? I was. I wasn't crazy nervous, but I certainly got more comfortable as I went along. But it was not, you're sitting in a room. It's not terribly different from this. But the teleprompter was a bit of a challenge. Scott Brewer, do you dance the horror? Oh, I do at weddings. Good point from Heather McDonald. Wingnuts who think Obama's undermining American power, elevating socialism, won't find any evidence in the WikiLeaks. Yes, true. Incidentally, I didn't cover this today. We'll get to it tomorrow. But the WikiLeaks guy was arrested in Britain on these sexual molestation charges. I want to talk about this during the show tomorrow, but I was going to start to dig into the whole question, but it's like it doesn't matter. I don't know if the guy is guilty. I don't know that these charges are trumped up or not. From what I've read, he essentially tricked a woman or two into believing that he was wearing a condom when they were having sex, and they didn't want to have unprotected sex. And, if that's true, in my mind, that is rape, if not a form of rape. Is it weird that Interpol seems to be getting involved in this? I don't know. I don't know if they normally track down people wanted in Sweden. None of that is relevant to the conversation. I think Roman Polanski should not be allowed to come back into this country without facing a trial or actually punishment for skipping bail. But that doesn't mean that I will never watch Rosemary's Baby again. It's a bad movie now. No. I can hold the belief that this guy Assange may be a creep and a rapist, for that matter. But his credibility is not the issue here. His credibility is not the issue whatsoever. It's the documents. And those documents are real. And he functioned not unlike the New York Times. I haven't read these documents on the WikiLeaks. I've read them on the New York Times or the Guardian. He is, as far as I can tell, a publisher. He's not a leaker. He didn't leak. This guy Manning did. And should that guy face punishment? Yes. I don't think he was functioning as a whistleblower in this capacity. Do I think these leaks are a good thing in certain instances? Yeah, I do. I do. Particularly the stuff about the way our government leaned on the Spanish and the Germans not to prosecute potential war criminals. Because I think that those war criminals should be held to account. And if it means that our ability to influence other countries holding those war criminals to account is undermined, I don't think that's a bad thing. But I don't need to be, and I don't think anybody does. I think it's a waste of time to talk about the validity of Julian Assange as the person. WikiLeaks is an organization, I think, that will be around longer than Julian Assange. And I think the attempts to shut down WikiLeaks is wrong and scary to me. Because they are a publishing entity. No different than the New York Times. Kevin, 1721, calls Bernie Sanders, asks him to filibuster the deal, 202-224-5141.
We've also got the link to the Daily Coast petition to sign.
We've got that on our Facebook and on Majority FM, yes, no?
Not on Majority FM, but go to our Facebook page.
I did not run into Lawrence O'Donnell last night at the MSNBC studios. WikiLeaks is only publishing docs that those other papers vet first. Hugely overlooked fact. That's right. That's right. Because the U.S. government refused to vet them. And they've already talked about their first document dump. They had some regrets on how that went. So. All right. I've gone way overboard today. 9 minutes of extra time is a bonus to you people. So I will see you tomorrow. Doesn't look like I'm doing Olbermann tonight. If I am, we may tweet it. Or just, you know, you watch it anyways. And we'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow on the show, Christina Davidson. She is other known as a recession roadie. She's on the road writing a book about how the recession is impacting people. That should be fun. She seems nice. I mean, hopefully, there'll be some uplifting stories, right? All right, folks. See you tomorrow. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my